Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music, Dave.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
You wouldn't be able to do these awful things to me if I weren't still in this chair.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Who's in the box?
Put the gun down, baby.
No, what's in the box?
I said you give me the
what's
gun.
What's in the box?
Wolves have a territorial range of about 300 miles and a kill range of 30. If we're close to their den, and if we're within that radius, then they'll come after us. How can we tell if we're close? We can't.
What in God's name are you talking about?
Your son, Mr. Thorne. The son of the devil.
They're insane.
He must die, Mr. Thorne!
You do not want to go that way.
What's that way?
Officer, sir, you do not want to go that way. We're going to the mall.
Hello, Dexter Morgan.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, in the state of New Hampshire, in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I am fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you?
Doing well.
Excellent. And a co-host from the state of Missouri?
Good evening. This is Kevin.
Kevin, how are you, sir?
Glad this week is over. It's been a long week.
Indeed, yes.
Thursday.
I get the day off. I'm taking it off. I'm taking all Thanksgiving off. For folks who are curious, today is November 18th, 2021. 1 week before Thanksgiving in the United States, basically giving the date out for some of our listeners, such as Pam, who are always curious when we record these episodes, because sometimes they are not released immediately after they've been recorded. And this one may not be released immediately after it's recorded. So for folks who have stumbled upon us, we are Dark Discussions Podcast, part of the Dark Discussions News Network, which is www.darkdiscussions.com. Our podcast basically dissects and reviews films, so horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno-thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, mysteries, foreign films, foreign language, and midnight movies, and I'm probably repeating myself, but generally you get the idea. Basically, we talk about a genre that deserves intelligence. So we do have a website, darkdiscussions.com, as I mentioned. And Eric, what else can people find on that website?
They can find links to our Patreon page. Patreon is a service that allows you to financially contribute to your online artists. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay for things like websites and audio hosting and so on and so forth. So if you would like to help offset the cost of producing a show, that's how you can do so. We appreciate any and all contributions. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions, and for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw one at random on a quarterly basis to do a show about. So if you'd like to do that, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the Patreon badge on any page of darkdiscussions.com.
Excellent. And anything that is donated to the podcast is greatly appreciated. So we do have if we do have time after, we will basically go into what we've been seeing, watching, news, whatever, assuming we do have time. But if not, no big deals. But we do have a movie we're going to talk about tonight. And Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about a movie that was released in theaters earlier this year, currently available on VOD, called The Night House.
My husband took a boat out on the lake. He took a handgun that I didn't even know that we owned, and...
Did he leave a note?
He did.
He
You were right. There is nothing. Nothing is after you. You're safe now. You said you were safe? Safe from what? And then over here we have, the husband. You know that we're paying people to do that, right? You don't have to do it all yourself. Owen? I didn't think we had secrets.
Everybody had secrets.
It's our house. But backwards. What the hell was he doing?
The Night House is a 2021 film. Technically, they say 2020 because it was released in Sundance early January before the pandemic. But it was released everywhere just recently, at least in the United States. It was actually a theater film, I believe, which
like
I think
in August, I think.
Yeah, which will, I knew you were going to say that because I think you saw it there. And it is now on VOD everywhere. It just was dropped from a $20 purchase to the normal rent and purchase of VOD films. So I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we think about it. So I will start. So I heard about this film because of it was, you know, like it was at the theaters, and Mike mentioned he had seen it. He didn't really give much detail, just said he saw it and thought it was all right, I guess. So I decided to watch it after we discussed what to do this week, and this film was chosen by the majority of us. And so I watched it the other day, and I felt it was some things that I'm a bit confused of, but generally, I think this may be the best horror film of the year. I love this film. This film was friggin' awesome. The movie was just creepy, scary, excellent mystery. I kind of guessed some of it, but there was still even more mystery behind of what I was guessing. But I would highly recommend this film. This is a great film. This is the type of film that is a Phil film. So, you know, like The Lodge and films like that, that I always promote. It follows. This is in that type of category when it comes to films. It is interesting because it is a supernatural film, maybe even a ghost film, or a demon film. But generally, I'm not a fan of those films all that much. But this one was really good. So, yeah, a high recommend. I'm not sure if it will be number one because I got to go back, see what I've seen this year, plus what's coming up. But it's definitely going to be close to the top. Let's go with you, Eric.
Well, I discovered this movie because every week I check and see what's playing in the theater since I don't watch trailers. And don't really watch TV or see commercials either. Every week I just kind of check and see what's out there. And this caught my eye and I went and saw it in the theater. And I loved this movie. I did my own little review of it back in the summer and put it up on YouTube. So I think this movie is beautifully shot, beautifully directed. But the number one reason to go see this movie is the performance of Rebecca Hall in the lead. She is phenomenal in this movie. One of the best performances of the year, in my opinion. Canadian. So yeah, I also highly recommend this film. Although, like Phil, there are a few little confusing plot issues that we'll talk about once we get past the spoiler flag. I agree with him on that point. But I still love this movie.
All right, sounds good. Let's go with you, Mike.
Yeah, I go to the movies a lot. I've gone to the movies a lot, even through a good part of the COVID pandemic. And they showed this trailer a lot for this film. And it was not a trailer that, surprisingly, was all that spoilery. I heard some good reviews for it. And my wife and I went to see it way back, again, in August, I think it was. And I really liked the film. I don't remember my wife being a big fan of it. She was kind of okay with it, lukewarm on it, I guess, if I remember correctly. But it is a film you don't want spoiled. I don't think it's not a Sixth Sense sort of shocking reveal, but I think you want to let the story roll itself out on its own terms. But if you do like, a potentially haunted house, demon possession, something similar to that type of film, without getting into too much specifics, that is sort of the vein that they're going by. And it was, kind of what I'm expecting watching it. I think I did finally get ahead of it and figure out what was going on. But even so, I still did like it, because I don't think it hinges on that. But it did keep me curious for a while. And I think really it is a good director's piece. The acting is very good, but in terms of getting atmosphere and mood and setting, I think they really do a good job with that and making it just get a great creepy vibe throughout it. And for me, one of the better jump scares I've seen in a while.
All right. Sounds good, Mike. Let's go with you, Kevin.
I only heard of this because Phil mentioned it last week, and that was fine with me. I watched it just today, and I thought, yeah, this is a fun movie. Well, fun movie. It's a good movie. It's a good watch. It's creepy. It's got creepy elements to it. It does have that air of mystery. It had me trying to figure out what was going on, and it is a recommend.
All right, sounds good. Let's go with you, Bert.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this film. There were some moments that really creeped me out visually. They did some neat things in this movie, and I agree with Eric. What's her name? Rebecca Hall? Is that what you said?
Yep, that's Eric? It.
Yeah, yep. Rebecca Hall.
She is amazing in this. I've seen her in some other things, but this is definitely a real high point for her career. She just does a great job, and she's the main actor through the whole thing. So it's definitely worth watching. It can get a little bit confusing because there's a lot going on in there, but I'm sure we'll discuss that as we go further.
All right, sounds good. So I guess we can get into the film. Before we do that, Eric, do we have an IMDb or a wiki?
Wiki. sorry, I scrolled all over the place when I went to the page and lost it. All right, here we go.
Wiki.
A widow begins to uncover her recently deceased husband's disturbing secrets.
All right, sounds good. I think that tails a little too much, but that's all right, I guess. I don't know.
It really didn't say anything.
Well, I think I would have said that a recent widow whose husband suicided, she discovers things that... Disturbing or something. I don't know. I'm just making sure.
But even the suicide is...
Yeah, I guess.
I don't think they tell them that right away. It takes a little while for them to reveal that, don't they?
That's true.
I have to be honest. I'm going by... I did not get a chance to rewatch the movie. So I am definitely going off, you know, yeah, 3 or 4 month old memories.
It's about 15 minutes in. You're that's a fair point, Mike. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So folks who are new to the podcast, we don't just review movies. We also critique and dissect. So At a certain point, we'll throw up the spoiler alert. We'll let everybody know when we throw that spoiler alert up. And we will discuss everything and anything that fits our fancy, including details and maybe symbolism and specific plot points that are curious or interesting. Discuss things that may be confusing and all this other stuff. But we will warn everybody when we get to that point. So before what we do, we can discuss general stuff about the film. So let's see. I usually have something to start, but I don't.
let me start with this. I think her performance is fantastic in the film. The film very much starts out with setting up the character and her being alone in this house that her husband designed and helped build, because the husband was an architect like George Costanza. And I think they do a great job of in the early 10-15 minutes of the film of putting her in shots where there is someone missing. You know, like, in other words, like showing her in the bed where there's room for a person to be there who's not there. You know, and using sort of that empty space to show her loneliness. I thought they did a really good job with that. It takes a little while for it to unfold as to why the husband dies. And yeah, he goes out in a boat and kills himself. But that takes a few minutes to get to that. So I did really, I just enjoyed just sucking you in that way.
Well, and I would like to add to that, that Rebecca Hall's performance in that section of the film was particularly striking to me, because like you said, she's often alone and she's portraying all these emotions, you know, about in reaction to her husband not being here anymore. We don't know why yet, but you see her sad, you see her angry, you see her frustrated, you see her confused, and she's portraying all of this just with her face. And I thought it was amazing.
That is true. That is true. I did forget to mention a couple of things. The director of this film, David Bruckner, he's the guy that worked on VHS and was supposed to – that led VHS 94 before he had to quit, because he's going to do the Hellraiser remake, reboot, whatever you want to call it. But should be best known not just for the VHS, where he was first really discovered, even though he had done some films like The Signal prior. But he's the director of the one of the best films that we ever reviewed, called The Ritual, from on Netflix, as a matter of fact.
That's right.
Yeah, so this guy has some cred.
That was either my number one or number two film that year.
Yeah, same here. I think it was my number two. I forget it was number one, but it was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, it was awesome. So I concur, Mike. The film, I want to agree too about Rebecca Hall's performance, but I really have to say, the thing that was awesome about this film, over her performance, was the screenplay. It was just fantastic. The direction of that screenplay, with the acting and the people they chose to act in the film, especially Rebecca, because this is her film. The movie was not boring at all. And I know when we were choosing the film, Mike, and I think you too, Eric, mentioned that it is a kind of a slow burn. And so I was very concerned when I pressed the play button. But this type of film really, I don't know if that really fits the film, because again,
slow burn doesn't mean bad.
Yeah, but I don't even know if it would be considered slow burn, because I didn't feel it's being slow.
It didn't feel slow to me. Yeah, exactly.
It
really wasn't a slow burn. I mean, so, I remember you telling me it was a slow burn, but as I'm watching this, it didn't seem like a slow burn, because there was constant her like looking, like, what's going on, it wasn't a slow burn.
Well, because she portrayed so much emotion, I think that really helped the pacing of the film.
Yeah,
it was her acting ability that made that possible, rather than necessarily
that's the thing. I think when you said slow burn, I was thinking that it was going to be like a drama that just dragged, but in no action. But I don't know. I don't know how to explain it without trying to redefine what slow burn means, I guess.
Well, Well, I mean, it seemed kind of consistent because there really wasn't like nothing, you know, kind of building up, and something huge happens, and then it kind of, this kind of just built up, but gradually, and not like a big crescendo, it just kind of built up, and then
I disagree. I think there was a big explosion moment. We'll talk about it after this point of the flag.
Yeah, I think there was too, as far as the explosion moment. Yeah,
sure.
Well, one of my favorite scenes happens in the first 10. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, there's that one discovery, but
exactly.
Yeah, okay, I stand corrected.
All right, so Barrett, what were you saying?
One of my favorite scenes, which is not horror related, is the scene when the parent comes in. I love that scene.
Oh my god,
it was really well done.
We can talk about that.
Yeah,
I really love that scene too. I also want to say that, excuse me. There's a best friend character in this movie played by Sarah Goldberg. And the character is the best friend in the world. And I want a best friend like her.
Yeah. And I think they did a great job in portraying that friendship. Cause sometimes it can be really hard to get that right. Where the friend is just coming across as a good friend and maybe not going too far over into good friend, you know, and other things. It's just, you can get weird readings, and they really nailed that vibe between the chemistry between the two of them was just really, really good.
Agreed.
Yeah. That's both performance and writing.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
And I could also totally say that they reminded me of a lot of teachers I know. So I think they nailed that really well. I did think it was really bizarre that school was over, the grades were handed out, kids were home for the summer, and the teachers were still there.
Yeah, that was what
that was like the only that was like that. What's that?
You're there all summer.
Yeah, but there's like a 2 week break. I'm not just sitting there in the in the dark playing by with myself the whole time. You know, I'm there for summer school.
I don't know if I buy that.
Well, I want evidence or I'm not just saying. I want some proof. And I did just say by myself.
Fair enough. That scene, I know that was the scene that would get a lot of talk. I don't know if it was as good as I think people think it is, because I've seen stuff kind of like that before in other films, so it wasn't like as interesting to me, but it definitely gets the point. It was a great point where we get the reveal of what happened to our husband, and that's what I think was the real importance of that scene. But I was a full supporter of the mother. Absolutely. I think it was just bad circumstances. The mother got, this kid got screwed. She got screwed.
Being a Karen.
I don't think so. What was the
situation again?
Basically what happened.
You didn't get his job done?
To have a better grade.
But that's not what happened. What happened was her son, Hunter, couldn't do a report on a certain day, because he was going to be out for personal reasons. And the teacher, which is our lead character, said that he could do his report, you know, that you'd do in front of the class on the last day of school.
No. She said he could do it before, like sometime after that he missed it.
Right.
Not necessarily the last day. He waited until the last day. There's a difference there.
No. I watched it. I actually didn't watch it. The other night I lied. I watched it this morning before work. And
why would you lie about that?
I don't know. And then she said, basically, she said that you assigned it for him to do it on Thursday, which was the last day of school. And you
actually not correct. He didn't do it when he was supposed to do it in the first place.
Right. But she agreed, the teacher agreed that the student could make it up because he wouldn't be in on the day that he was originally assigned, and she said you can do it on the last day of school. Now, her husband.
I'm gonna watch it to check that, because I could swear that she said he can do it.
Regardless, he had a date. He knew he had to do it ahead of time. He knew he was.
No. He came in on the last day to do it.
We don't know that. That's just what the mom said.
She was there. He was in school. He was there to do it. And what happened was,
we don't know that. We didn't see it happen.
Yeah. Well, we don't know that he actually worked on it. We just know she's trying to get him a grade that works. So,
That's not the case. No, what she did was she said that her son was given the new date. The teacher agreed that the new date was that day, but she was not in because of personal reasons, which was her husband blew his brains out, and so she wasn't there. And so,
I guess we're past the spoiler flag.
So she Mike had already said that he blew his brains out in the boat. So
I don't think I said that. Just said he committed suicide. He said he killed himself
right
in the boat. But yeah, but anyway.
Right, it doesn't matter. He killed himself. So the point is that she said, I wasn't there. So, I mean, that's what it was. The woman just wanted her son to be able to do the report on the day that he was assigned after the teacher agreed. Unfortunately, there was a terrible situation where the teacher didn't show up because of what happened. And as a result, she marked it as a zero. When technically she wouldn't have marked it as a zero had she not have this horrible thing that happened to her, and she would have been in school, and the student would have been able to present it to the teacher on the last day of school. But again, this really has nothing to do with the main story of the film anyway, so it doesn't matter. We don't have to argue whether the teacher or the mother was right, or if, as you say,
we don't have to, but it's fun.
I guess. I don't know. All right. Well, anyway.
I'll just say, I don't know what happened, but parents lie for the kids all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's true. Though I remember being a student, and a lot of teachers were fucking scumbags, too. So it could go both ways. In this case, well, you're a teacher, I had some rotten teachers, dude.
Oh yeah, no, there are assholes. There are absolutely assholes. Teacher propaganda is real,
indeed. So either way, that was a scene where we discover how the husband died, because we knew that she was at least somewhat of a widow at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
after the spoiler flag, I also want to talk about the scene in the bar.
Yeah, that was an interesting scene too. What else do we want to talk about before we get into the spoiler flag? Is there anything else that is of note?
There's some great visuals in this movie. I particularly liked the red moon. That was pretty wicked looking.
I don't remember that, actually, Eric. Must have missed that.
I like there's the one scene they used it a couple of times, but the first time I didn't see it coming, where they use the, oh, look, there's been someone hiding in the scene all along. Like, yeah. You see the movement, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. the way they do it is with the negative space and the architecture of the house.
Yes.
So rather than it being a part of the house moving, it's a part of the empty space in the house that moves.
Yeah, that was really cool.
I was like, so it's sort of like this. Yeah, so it's like an optical illusion, and I thought that was fantastic, because you've been setting it up the whole time with the house and the design. So and you never went and said, oh, look, there's a person silhouette there, you know, and then it moved. No, it was just, oh my god, the negative space moved. I thought that was brilliant.
Yes, I would concur. Let's see. Any other items that you wanted to bring up? Kevin, do you have anything that you wanted to bring up that isn't spoilery?
Nope. Phil, you are incorrect. I just watched it. All the mother says is that he told you could make it up. He's the one that waited till the last day.
Oh,
he came in last Thursday to do it, and you weren't here. That's what I thought.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe, yeah,
that makes a difference.
Word for it. I agree with you, but I don't know if that still makes this the mother being a Karen, because technically she was right. He had up until the last day to do it, right? It's just that.
Yeah, but it doesn't work that way. Like, if you're in school and you got a test and the teacher can't be there and you didn't make it up in the amount of time that you had, you're the one that screwed up, not them.
No, but he had that amount of time to even do it on that day. It's just that the teacher couldn't make it, and then she even admitted the reason I wasn't there was because of what happened to her personal life.
Well, first she said personal reasons, and yep. The mother wasn't taking that. Then finally she said, look, my husband, you know, such and such, and put a gun to his head that I never even knew he had and blew his brains out. So right, really, right. Whether or not your kid gets a B, C, or an A really doesn't matter that much to me. Do you want to be? I'll give him an A. No, no, he's all right. Okay, I'll give him a B. Done. Goodbye.
Right, and that's pretty much how the scene went. Yeah, that's right. So, anyway.
And it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter, right, right. The point whether of the scene,
the,
is basically
the scene or the grade.
Right, the point of the scene was to make us find
reveal
out.
Reveal the circumstances of the husband's death.
That's right.
Oh, exactly. I thought it was to show that parents were assholes. All right, never mind.
Oh, that too.
It wasn't for that?
Well, I didn't think she was an asshole. I'm sticking with it.
Phil's in school.
Well, I mean,
she had an extra day to do the macaroni picture.
If you're told.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, let's just move on. All right, so anything else, Barrett? What about you? Anything else you wanted to bring up that is not spoilery that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, there's just some really cool filming in this where different objects are made to appear sinister and might be and probably are, but it's really hard to tell because the way they do it, and they do this movement thing where it goes away when she moves. It's just, I thought it was really brilliant how they did it.
Is that the same thing that you were talking about, Mike?
Yeah, pretty much. And they do it a couple of times. It's just the first time, that was a jump. The first time was definitely a jump for me because I did not see that coming.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
I do want to mention also that the end of this movie, I think, kind of worked as a metaphor that really connected with me on a personal level. So I walked out of the theater really, really, really loving this movie. But I thought I might be exaggerating how good it was in my head because of the personal connection. So I watched it again last weekend with my friends Dan and Susie, and they both also thought it was really good, so it's not just me.
Right, plus everybody else on this podcast, too.
right. Right.
yeah, exactly. The personal little thing, can you say, or you prefer not to?
No, I'll say. I just want to wait till after the spoiler flag.
Gotcha. All right, sounds good. Let's see. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up before we bring up the spoil thing? All right, sounds like we're pretty good. So at this point, we're going to throw up the spoil flag. So that means basically we will discuss anything and everything related to film spoilers and all specific scenes and maybe twists and whatever. So you have been warned. So the spoil flag is up. So I guess we can discuss anything and everything.
I would say, like, let me just say, I non-spoilers, except that they're, unless it's what you want to know didn't happen, right? Because there is a mystery to it, like happens with a lot of these kind of stories. You're trying to figure out what's going on. And I was trying to figure out, well, what are the normal possibilities in this? And possibility one is that the husband actually didn't die, right? That he had done something to fake his death.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was one I had considered. I had considered, of course, he was actually murdered and it was a staged suicide. You know, so that, yeah. And that, like, the ghost of the husband was trying to find justice. Right. And so I appreciated that. I'm trying to remember if there was anything else that was, or maybe that there was a, you know, excuse me, if there's anything else that I was thinking at the time. Those were the two that, like, stood out to me the most. And I was glad that they didn't go with anything that easy to figure out. I did piece together most of it by the time it was the end of the film. But I don't expect most people would.
Right, right. Gotcha. Let's see what I wanted to bring up. I don't know, Mike. I'm with you there. I also thought he suicided and pretty quick because of some dark secret, whether he was a serial killer, whether he was going mentally insane because of some evil or whatever. And then, of course, you know, little things pop up like possible witchcraft and weird drawings in his architect book.
The whole trail that they put out to get us there was really well done, in that you didn't quite understand what was going on until the last minute.
I got to say one thing. When they did show the weird architect stuff, they did it the right way, because they show the house, a house that he's building, or his house that he built, the home that they live in. And then they show all these weird things, like spiral staircases and stuff that have nothing to do with the house. But then they show the house reversed. And that was, I think that was good that they didn't go the house and then the reverse house right away and then the weird pictures, because like the neighborhood I grew up, there was, you know, all the houses were very similar, except, you know, a lot of them had added additions and whatever. But the original houses, before any of the additions, they were the same house, or they were the reverse image of a house. So one house would be, you know, the garage door, the garage is on the left side, and the back door was on the right side, while the next house would be the identical, but it would be the reverse image. And that would have made me not think anything was odd about that architect book, because it's like, oh, that's just like my neighborhood that I grew up in. But because they put all the weird stuff in between, when we do get to the reversed image house, we could say, okay, so this is more than just deciding to maybe make the house the opposite way.
And it's also not inherently sinister, which is why it works. I don't know how architects work. I don't know if they just like keep books like that around, and if maybe they just use them to draw ideas that they have and maybe not necessarily ever build. So maybe he was just messing around one day and said, hey, how about we flipped it? So while it plays in later in a really interesting way, just seeing that drawing of the inverted floor plan isn't necessarily a kind of ominous red flag. It's just like, oh, there it is, flipped.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're right. It's not ominous. It's just weird, and we know that there's something weird about it, because it's specifically, we know we're watching a horror movie, right?
Yeah, right. But that's the only reason there's any suspicion there's anything up with it, and also because there's some weird notes in the same book.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there were some weird notes. I did not write them down, but they were definitely weird. Let's see. So you know, the setup is basically, we have this woman that's very depressed. So it's going to be a very moody, depressing type film, you probably would gather, and sure enough, it kind of is. And then basically we learn that she's sad, lonely. She has some dream sequences that I'm not sure if you, Mike, would have appreciated, but I can see why they added them in. And then we find out that she's a school teacher, and then, yeah, boom, we find out that her husband is actually passed away. It was because even at that point, I don't know if we even knew he was dead yet. He could have just left. I mean, I can't remember.
No, we knew he was dead.
Yeah, in one of the opening scenes, it's subtle, but like when her friend sees her to the door and gives her the casserole, pretty clear they're coming from her husband's funeral.
And they're all in black.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. If aliens ever visited the ruins of our civilization and tried to learn about us through movies, one thing they would know is that the only time anyone ever makes casserole is when someone dies. And you never eat it yourself. You always give to the other person. And the other reason thing, of course, they would learn is that only pregnant women vomit.
Yes. Women, yeah. Women only vomit before they know they're pregnant.
Yes, that is true in movies.
And cats live in closets.
Yeah, that's true. We find out that he blew his brains out. It wasn't like cancer or AIDS or some other horrible disease. It was simply depression, which is also a very horrible thing. Behavioral health issues. And we find out pretty soon, and it comes to the scene you wanted to talk about, Eric, at the bar or the lounge or restaurant, whatever you want to call it, where we find out that that scene plus the follow-up scene where we find out that she's the one that is really depressed and she feels guilty because she believes that she, I guess, brought her depression upon him. In other words, he was the happy-go-lucky and she was just a sad, melancholy person. He saw it every day and eventually he became like her, and yeah, life is terrible. And unlike someone that is always depressed, who just deals with it and can live with it, someone that is generally happy who suddenly becomes massively depressed and finds out life means nothing, they're more apt to snap and unfortunately do something like what her husband did. So Eric, you want to talk a little bit about these scenes here?
The bar scene was fun because it's really the only time in the movie that we spend any time with characters who aren't her neighbor or her best friend. There's one moment in particular where for some reason they start talking about the husband's suicide and one of the friends asks, did he leave a note? And everybody else at the table yells at her for asking that. And then I got to look up Rebecca Hall's character name. But Rebecca Hall is basically like, yeah, he did. I've got it here in my purse. But he's just like, what?
Well, because that is one of those things that we all want to know. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Like if you go into work and someone's spouse has committed suicide or died by suicide, whatever the proper terminology is for that now, we all want to know how. It's a sick thing in our brains. It's not technically any of our business, but we kind of want to hear the details. I'm not saying that it's a good thing. I'm just saying it is a thing. It is a very human, very real thing.
No, I get it. But it really is kind of like to ask about it is kind of a faux pas. And then the fact that she whips it out of her purse and it's got blood stains on the corner, it's just like, oh no.
So he had it with him, did he? Okay.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if I would be talking about it. I felt all our friends were just weird talking about the whole thing, you know, because I don't even know.
Mike has a point that is natural to want to know, but yeah. I mean, it's probably more socially acceptable to let the person talk about it when they're ready rather than try and pry.
Yeah. Well, that it's like. True. It's like I saw a YouTube video with the guy playing guitar, and I just couldn't help but notice that every time the camera shifted to his left, because it was a guy, musician with a beard, he had a mole on the side of his neck, and the hair coming out of the mole was at least as long as the beard.
Where is this going?
And my point is, I think if you run into that person, you would do everything you could to pretend you're not staring at that.
Okay, yeah.
Mike is watching porn again.
And we'd all want to say, you're like, would you please fucking
Molly, cut Molly, 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 Molly. That's right. That's right.
But we also know that if you're there and then suddenly someone goes, "Oh my God, look at all the hair coming out of that mole," we would all go, "Stop giving voice to our inner thoughts. Don't do that."
but it was so soon.
Yeah,
I mean, this is like just days later, or at least a week later.
I agree that it was inappropriate for her to ask, but I also understand what Mike's point is, that you want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought the scene played out pretty hilariously. I also enjoyed how somebody started quoting Hamlet, and she acted like she was all offended, and then she was just messing with him.
Yeah, it was her best friend. It was the best friend.
Yeah, it was a great scene, for sure.
Yeah. She
because, you know, English teachers, right?
Right.
She was definitely, I would have been very uncomfortable in that whole situation. First of all, I wouldn't have been asking any of the questions, so I would have just been there quiet in the background. But yeah, I mean, you could tell that.
Well, that one female teacher, the African-American one, she was having she was kind of the one that was kind of off in the corner, like, okay, I'm not saying a word here.
Technically, she could have been a Caribbean-American, so we don't know. But she's a person of color. How's that?
Okay, anyway, that one, she was sitting in the corner kind of having that I am feeling very awkward now look.
Yeah.
I need more to drink.
Yeah, who was
that? Most teachers have that look on their face most of the time.
Oh, okay.
And they also look like they need another drink.
Yeah.
Well, I thought she was inappropriate too. They were all kind of inappropriate because she was the one that said you shouldn't be joking about something after the suicide thing. But I just don't think I would say anything. I just. You know, person's going to have to deal with.
Let's all go out for drinks and stare at each other with awkward silence.
Well, I would have been talking about. So how about Mac Jones just throwing another touchdown? That was pretty damn good. You know, that's what I would have said something.
Yes, about, that's what Otani, English teachers talk about is sports.
Otani, he just won the MVP. What do you think of that? hey, you're in a stereotype, Mike, saying that English teachers don't enjoy other things. You're
No, I'm talking about when they're gathering together with other English teachers. You don't. That's a different thing.
Then I would have talked about. So how's your dinner going or something? I don't know. I would have just brought something else up.
So I forget where in the sequence of events this starts occurring, whether it's before that scene or not. But eventually we get to point where. Go ahead, Kevin.
I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting. It was before because I think
what is the scene?
Happened. I mean, we're talking. I mean, this is when.
She's
talking about did the crazy things happen before the bar scene, right?
Well, I'm talking about what's going on at the house.
Right. I thought that almost immediately started.
Okay.
Because I remember she had like the first night she
but that was
having
a dream sequence though, right? Oh no, it was the radio turned, right?
The radio,
the
yeah.
Radio turned the almost said the radio. Radio.
It turned out to be a dream sequence, right?
Was the whole thing a dream though? Well, it was done. Unclear.
Well, she got texts, right? And then she went to shut off the radio and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next moment she wakes up, so she thought it was real because it felt real, right?
Well, and then she saw footprints outside, right?
That's right. True.
So it appears as if perhaps her husband is haunting her,
or gaslighting.
Goes down that trail for a while.
Right. Oh yeah. Or like you said, Kevin. Yeah, it could be gaslighting. Too at that point because we don't know if it's a supernatural film, but again though, were those footprints part of the dream?
No, I think that was pretty clearly after she woke up.
Okay.
Yeah, that was she was going to work, and she happened to see the footprint. Well, first of all, she saw the door.
Yeah.
The gate opened so that as she was on there, she saw the footprints and it went all the way down to the dock. And she's like, oh, wow. But then she had to go to work. And then when she came back, the footprints were gone.
So it could have been somebody gaslighting her, but.
See, at first, that's what I thought it was. At first, that's what I thought it was. But as and I was kind of going there for most of the rest of the movie and until I'm not quite sure when. But I realized, nah, this isn't gaslighting.
Yeah, there was also the moment where she heard a gunshot.
Right. That's right.
And her neighbor didn't hear it.
Right. And even then, when we do hear the gunshot, we immediately hear the airplane flying over. So I thought maybe it was just her imagination or it was just a plane and it wasn't a gunshot.
No, but it was definitely a gunshot. It wasn't a plane. But see, the thing is also is like in rural areas like that, especially like when you have, you know, a lake area or whatever, somebody is bound. I mean, someone's probably has a gun. And the thing is that that's one of the reasons why it made me start to wonder if it was gaslighting, because first she saw the footprints. But the thing is, this is also before we find out that he shot himself. So we hear the gunshot. And then when the woman says, you know, my husband shot himself in the head, it's like, ah, so that's why she's a little bit more sensitive to the gunshots, you know, because of that, because when she saw her neighbor later on that day, she said, have you been shooting your gun? Because he obviously had one, because I think he's talking about snakes or something like that. And he said, well, I wasn't shooting this morning. I didn't see any snakes and shot him this morning. So, I mean, it's in a rural area like that, like a shotgun or a rifle or whatever is very common. It's almost expected.
Right. It was a copperhead. So you knew it was somewhere.
Right.
It wasn't Tennessee because we.
It was New York.
It was New York. I'm going to say New York.
It was New York.
It was a New York license plate.
Gotcha.
They had a New York license plate, and you saw one of the signs saying Utica, you know, X amount of miles. And yeah,
that's right, yes.
That's definitely New York.
Okay. See, I didn't know copperheads were in New York. How about that? I learn something new every day. Well, we don't get them up here. That's the reason why. For some reason, I just didn't think they were in the Northeast. But anyway, a lot of things are happening, but the question is she an unreliable narrator at that point?
Right.
Anybody think that? I don't know.
Yeah, well, there's always that behavioral health individual thing, especially following a trauma. Right.
Especially
a trauma. And again, drinking English teacher, so that doesn't go well either.
Right. Well, and she admitted that she was the mass depressive, right? That she said she was the one that, you know, so I'm thinking, okay, so maybe she's just going crazy and it's going to be one of those films like The Lodge, for example, spoiler alert, or the movie we reviewed last week, which I won't say the name because it's brand new. I don't know. But I assumed I did read a blurb somewhere earlier that it said, and in the blurb it said supernatural. So I kind of wasn't expecting an unreliable narrator because of that. So it was kind of spoiled because I just read a little blurb that said, the supernatural thriller, blah, 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 or horror film. Yeah.
I don't always believe in the unreliable narrator. I do often believe in the unreliable blurb.
Yeah, that's true.
Learned that lots of things lie to you when it comes to promoting a movie.
It's interesting, though, because there is clearly some trauma going on, and we are led to wonder if some of what she's experiencing is actually happening or not. But then she starts getting things that are actually concrete that can't be, poo-pooed away, like the pictures on her husband's phone. Those are real. Those are there. They can't be denied. So it's an interesting combination between actual real world evidence of something and her having these dreams or visions or whatever you want to call it that we're not entirely sure are real or being communicated to her or a product of her trauma and depression.
Well, there's one thing to correct you, Eric. There was one picture on his phone that had a picture of a woman going through books, and it looked like her. But then she's thinking about, well, that doesn't – I don't remember that picture, and maybe it's not me. But it was on his computer, right? That's where all the pictures – eventually
one was on his phone, the rest were on his computer, but I could have told you that it wasn't her because she didn't have a wedding ring on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, see, I wasn't looking at that.
And no one mentioned that. She says, I don't have a shirt like that. I'm sitting to think of myself, you don't have the girl doesn't have a wedding ring on. That should have told you something.
Well, we all look at different things. And Eric, by the way, there's a whole lot of divorced men out there who absolutely denied the pictures that were on their phone.
Well, they're dumb.
Right. That is true.
Right. Well, and the picture is interesting, too, because it looks most certainly like her. But, yeah, I mean, many things are mentioned, like you noticed, you know, right at wedding ring, Kevin. Sometimes I just forget my wedding ring because I take it off at night and then I shower and then I change into my daily clothes. And usually I reach for my wedding ring, but once in a while I may forget it. So there's always a chance. But again, in a film like this, it wouldn't be coincidental. But also, like Eric mentioned, or was you, Mike, the clothes she wore, right? I mean, oh, that's not – I don't have that blouse. I don't have that skirt. I don't have whatever. So
on that location could have been generic, but, you know, she didn't recognize the location either.
Right. And I think I was, when I was looking at the picture, I wasn't looking at the girl. I was trying to read what books they were there, or to see if it was like, and I was at that point, we had already learned about the reverse house that he had created in his architect book, that I was thinking, all right, I want to see if the words on the book were reversed. So I tried to pause it a couple of times and zoom in and stuff, but you can't read any of the titles. So that's when I said, okay, so that's not what I'm looking at. So what am I looking at here? And then when she shows the picture to her friend, that's when she says, I don't know if this is me. And that's when I said, oh, interesting. But then I was thinking she was gaslighting herself by saying, that's not me. And it's like, of course it's you. But you're going to say something there.
Yeah, I think you missed the overall point I was trying to make there, which is that there are these events that we couldn't be sure were actually real, or that were definitely not real, like the text messages, right? And the radio thing, which may or may not have been a dream. But then those pictures are absolutely 100% real, and they exist. That's the point I was trying to make.
Right. And that's when I suddenly was beginning to think, okay, her husband's a serial killer, and he killed himself or something.
Well, as it turns out, you weren't far off.
That's exactly what I was thinking too, Bill. Exact same moment.
Right. The first thought was he's a serial killer, you know, and she's his type, and he's got a collection of wedding rings of all the ones that he's murdered. At that point, that is, I think, the first thought. But there's more. There was more.
Yeah, that's true.
And then there's also the existence of the other house, which comes up, right? I believe she actually, and I'm always foggy about sequence for some reason. Did she discover the house before she went to the bookstore?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so. No, so she discovered this other house. Which I guess was technically in a state park, which is weird because they're right on the same lake. So I don't understand how they could be allowed to live there, but no other house is supposedly allowed to be built. But
probably has special permission beforehand.
Well, that's the thing, is the lake itself. I've seen parks, at least in my general area, where a lake itself isn't in the state park, but part of the shore is. So it didn't confuse me that much, but again, that's a fair point. Anyway, Eric.
Anyway, they she discovers this other house on the other side of the lake that
which is supposed to be in the state park, right?
That's, yes, you're not supposed to be building houses there, but he did it anyway. And she actually runs into her neighbor over there who says there's nothing there, but she finds the house that he started building that's the mirror image of the house she lives in.
And I think we want to mention that the neighbor's acting a little suspicious at this point, or it appears to be to her.
A little squirrely. Yeah, a little squirrely. And while she's exploring the house, she finds this statue with like a whole bunch of spears or something sticking like out nails. Of it in, inside this little, I don't know what you even call it. It's not a waste basket. Like he built it for the thing. It's like a container of some sort. And she decides to take it home.
It's like a little
My friend Susie started yelling at the television when she started to hang up.
Do you want a Cenobite? Oh, that's how you get a Cenobite
at home.
Well, I'll tell you the thing. We know it's a horror film, but she doesn't. So for her, it's just some weird freaky thing.
Yeah, why would you want the weird freaky thing in your house?
Well, that's fair.
You didn't hear her inner voice that said, "Jinkies, it's a clue."
All right, right. Yeah, yeah. And at that moment, I was like, okay, this guy isn't just a serial killer, but he's a devil worshiper.
He's a fetish killer.
Exactly. I thought he was one of them. Exactly. So he was a complete psycho, is what I was beginning to think.
Mm-hmm.
And
I forget exactly how she gets. What led her to the bookshop? She found the book in the other house, right? Or was it in
the house? There's the stamp in the book.
It was in her own house, I think, right? And there was stamps in the book. That's where he purchased the books.
Right.
And the thing is that at this point, I didn't even know if I came to the conclusion, well, maybe he isn't a serial killer. Maybe he's being attacked or bothered by a demon.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because then they start talking about the maze, you know, she starts reading about the maze is mm-hmm. created to trap the demon and all this other stuff. So I'm thinking, holy smokes, this guy was possessed or had this, you know, similar to like the Vigil where some creature is just following you your whole life, you know, and mm-hmm. and finally he just snapped and he killed himself. So again, this was just more interesting things about the mystery. Though I must admit, when she does go to the bookstore, I was expecting a Rosemary's Baby incident where she goes to the bookstore and she finds more books that are weird or then maybe witches' books or whatever. But that was all a red herring because it was really just to get us to have her meet the girl in the original picture that was on her husband's phone that she thought was her but really wasn't. So I thought that was weird. Or interesting that they didn't go full devil worshiping books, you know?
Right. Well, and the interactions between her and that woman were so weird and awkward. I loved it.
Yeah, it's kind of what I would expect from a situation like that.
It's not what I would expect, though, because like maybe you guys just picked up on it quicker than I did. But like for me, I'm thinking like husband was cheating with her. And so when she starts revealing that, like, no, I never slept with him. That's not what he wanted from me. I'm like, well, what's going on here? This is weird.
Well, you're just not good at picking up on the signals, lady.
well, and they did kiss. She didn't say that, you know, initially. So, to the wife, that was cheating alone right there. So,
right. But I mean, but the funny part is later on when Beth was talking with her friend and she says, you know, they never had sex. This is, well, do you believe her? Actually, yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
And like, all I kind of, I just, I'm sorry, it's a little slightly off topic. One of the things that I wanted to mention that to me, I was thinking about gaslighting. I'm sorry if I'm changing the subject. Why I'm changing the subject. But one of the things I thought was gaslighting is before she talked with the mother in the classroom, you know, she fell asleep, and she was asleep for a good 40 minutes. And then when she woke up, on her computer was like a website with like selling guns. And she's like, you could just sort of look at her face like, I didn't search for these. And so that's kind of one of the reasons why I thought it was somebody gaslighting her.
Well, another thing that was weird about it, too, was when she was talking to that teacher. I mean, let me rephrase that. Talking to that parent. When the parent comes in, she immediately closes her computer screen to open up the thing for the student grades. And the screen she closes is a website to purchase handguns. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah. But I was trying to figure out why.
That's the scene that you're specifically talking about, Kevin.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and one of the things that I was kind of wondering is that, all right, I'm kind of playing a little legality here, is that they're in New York. You can't get a handgun in New York without a license.
Theoretically,
you know, and so legally, and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, yeah, he had a gun. I didn't even know he had it. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm thinking legally, because when I was in New York, I had a carry conceal license, and they had to ask my wife, hey, do you know he's asking for a carry conceal license? And my wife says, yeah, because I'm applying for one too. You know, I mean, it was just noticed.
You know what, though? We don't know how long they've lived in New York, and she mentions that they came originally from Tennessee, so it could have been a gun that
you can get the guns in Tennessee at a local 7-Eleven, I'm sure. That's pretty close.
Yeah, my brother lives in Tennessee, and that's pretty close.
Yeah, but, I mean, I just have a feeling. I mean, I was suspecting at that time that she was just trying to, like, figure out where did the gun come from? How did he get a gun?
Right.
How much did the gun cost? Because that's not going to be an easy expense to hide in a lot of circumstances.
Right.
No, it's not.
Yeah, so I interpreted that in a little bit differently than you, Kevin, which was that I thought that she was, like Mike was just talking about, she was trying to figure out, like, where he got the gun, like looking online, seeing if you could buy it there, and then had fallen asleep and then woke up and realized that there was a parent in a room, and then she had a website up with guns on it and panicked. That's how I took it anyway.
Okay, because I mean, she kind of had more of a surprise look, like, I wasn't searching for this earlier, but you might be right. I mean,
I took the surprised expression on her face to be like, holy cow, there's a parent here, and I just woke up.
That's where
I was confused with your comment, Karen, because that's what I thought was what Eric just said. That she was like, whoops, I don't want this parent to see this website.
Yep.
But again, it's a small stuff. So yeah, that conversation where she confronts the girl at the bookstore. That was definitely weird, as you said, Barrett, and very uncomfortable. And they drag it out for a couple of minutes before you really discover that it's legit, that the girl knew her husband. Because I was curious, because a lot of those pictures that we see on the computer, never mind the picture of this girl on her husband's phone, were kind of like creep shots. I mean, I was not expecting the girl to say that she had a mini attraction or affair with the dead husband. I was expecting her to say maybe she knew the husband, but that was it. And, you know, he was friendly with him because he came into the store a lot, and that was it. Because again, I thought maybe he was just a freak. But in reality, it was, yeah, he was actually searching out young ladies to I guess, have affairs with, at least at that point.
Well, I don't think that's the main purpose.
That's what they were thought anyway.
Okay.
That was the initial thought. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What else did we want to bring up about that bookstore? Were you guys surprised the bookstore really led to nothing to do with the books? Except
a little bit, because they really showed the cover of the one,
yeah,
and they focused on that whole maze thing and everything. I thought they'd do a little more with it.
Didn't they even show that figurine that she found too in the book?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The books. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did expect that to go somewhere a little more than it did, but I think like she got distracted. So story wise, she got distracted. That's why we didn't get more.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and I understood the books in context later. And at some point I want to do kind of a deep dive into that, the whole thing that's going on. Because I have some issues with it. And I just want to talk about it with you guys because it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Eric, I'm kind of with you. It's like, what was the entity? What was the demon? Why was it there? Why was it bothering?
Well, I have more questions than that even. So I'm just going to start the conversation if you don't mind. We eventually discover. The suicide note that her husband left referenced something that she had told him and only him about experience she had had earlier in her life, which is that I guess when she was in college or something, she was in a car crash where she technically died for a few minutes. And everybody would ask her what she saw when she died, whether there was a bright light or anything like some people say. And she said there was just nothing.
Right.
And his suicide note says something like you were right, that there is nothing. You are safe now. And there's something else in there, but I can't remember it right now.
It was four lines. So
she understood that you were right, there is nothing was a reference to what she told him about that experience.
Right.
Now, I guess what happened is that the nothing that she saw is actually an entity of some sort. We'll just.
Right.
It's a bad play on words. Okay, just calling it a demon for convenience sake?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So the emptiness she saw was a demon. And when she came back to life, the demon was upset because she was supposed to have died and her soul was supposed to long to hit. So we're on agreement so far?
See, when I saw that, I thought, like, at the end, I thought it was the Grim Reaper.
Okay.
Okay.
But, I thought it was just some shadow creature.
All right.
But whatever the identity of the creature is, it's a creature of some supernatural bent that wanted her after she died.
Yes.
Yeah, collects the souls or something, yeah.
And it doesn't entirely matter what it was.
All right, so you know what this does? This kind of actually makes me see two things now about the husband. It makes me see the husband as both a person who does things wrongly to protect the one he loves because he kills other people, but he isn't all evil either because
he was trying to protect her,
right? Yep. Even though he was a murderer because he was killing innocent people to try
right
to
it was the right.
so
the creature was driving him to commit evil acts.
So this entity, whatever you want to call it, wants her back and starts trying to influence the husband to kill her. said it was whispering in his ear for years. And somehow the husband found out. And this is one disconnect that I'm willing to just let slide, but I don't understand how the husband would have ended up finding all these reference books to try and confuse this entity. I guess after a number of years of it bothering you, you would seek out a solution. But that's why he was building another house with the mirror configuration and the creepy statue and all of that, is because he was trying to confuse the demon and have it think. And he was murdering these women that he found that looked like his wife, because he was trying to confuse this entity into thinking that he had done what it wanted and killed his wife. But after a while, it would figure it out and come back, so he would do another one, and so on and so forth, until one day he couldn't deal with it anymore and decided to take his own life.
Right, right, because it was continuously bothering him. And then also, he, even though he was murdering innocent people, in his heart, I guess, he really isn't a murderer. And so he figured, I'll just take my own life, because then I won't be killing innocent people anymore. But the question I have is why does he say you're safe now?
Well, because he thinks that the entity is not going to bother her, because he took all the precautions and now he's not around to influence anymore. Which brings me...
The architecture of the house is part of that too, right?
Yes, yeah. The architecture of the second house, the statue, the container it was in, all that.
Right, and then he kills himself too, which makes him not a threat either.
Exactly.
Right. Now, what I'm trying to remember, did he let the phone chick go, or did the phone chick get away from him?
He let her go.
You mean the book chick, the bookstore chick?
Well, the one that was on the phone, yeah.
The one that talked with the wife.
Right, because I was trying to, because it's like I said, it's been a couple months, so I'm trying to remember whether she, whether he was thwarted and that therefore was putting her in greater risk because he didn't get to stave that appetite. Or if he just, that was finally a conscious choice and he finally gives up. Okay. I was trying to remember that.
Oh, no, yeah. She said, he started strangling her and she said, hey, that's stop. Right. And he realized, and he said, okay. You know, and she thought he was kind of doing something, you know, kind of aggressive sex or something. But then she's like, no. And he's like, okay. And that's when he realized, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
So here's my big question about this movie. Which is that after the husband is gone, we eventually find out that this entity that's been haunting her, for lack of a better word, the entire movie, is this entity that wants her to die so he can have her soul again and starts attacking her directly. My question is, if it is capable of attacking her directly, then why didn't it just do that in the first place? Why is it messing around with the husband?
I think you've just found a hole in the plot. That's a good one, Eric. I think
that was my big question about the movie, is that if it's capable of going after her directly, I don't understand why it was trying to manipulate the husband secondhand.
That's a really good point.
Directly, it's a bureaucracy demon. and therefore is obligated to find the least efficient way to accomplish every task.
Well, did she maybe mess something up with the architecture and stuff by taking that statue out of the thing, bringing it back, making her vulnerable?
Well, yeah, but it wasn't there to begin with. The husband made it.
So you're saying, like, before that point, before he architectured all this stuff,
before it ever even talked to the husband or tried to influence the husband, why didn't it go after her directly? That's what I don't understand.
Well, maybe it was. Maybe that's what her depression was all about. She just didn't realize that it was this entity.
But
just a thought.
Why would it manifest as depression instead of actually like
Well, it manifested itself in her trying to kill herself at the very end. So she had to commit the action. So I think it was just an influencer. Okay. I hate to say influencer, but it was an influencing force. And up until that point, she meets her husband and he creates all that stuff. Up until that point, it's probably trying to kill her through depression or whatever means it can. By that point at the end, the entity is out in the open, so it can show itself however it wants to, because it's taken over the form of her husband at that point, because he thinks that's going to influence her the most.
But why did it crack her head against the mirror? If
for fun.
No, but how did it become an entity? Wasn't it first of all trapped in the house and so couldn't get to her, supposedly? And second of all, why? Yeah, like you said, I still don't understand why it wasn't out originally.
Well, and no, what Baird just said had some merit, and it makes me wonder if I'm misinterpreting the form of its influence. Because when it's talking to the wife, it says that it was whispering in her husband's ear. And to me, that meant actually words. But maybe it just meant it was putting thoughts in his head.
That's exactly where I was going. That's better put.
Well, the
other thing I was going to mention about the mirror crack, some of that force could be coming from what she is seeing. So she actually is throwing herself back. She's not actually being pushed.
I was under the impression that that entity had a real physical presence at that point in the movie because of the part right before that, where she thinks it's her husband, and you see her skin flattening when she's touching it.
That is true. Yeah, you have a point there.
I was going to say with the demon, if the demon's whispering in the guy's head, I mean, we all have voices in our head and we're used to that voice being our own, and so putting in a very simplistic version, if you're sitting on the couch and the voice in your head says I want chocolate, you'll think you're the one that's thinking you want chocolate. I would imagine, never to the best of my knowledge, having had a foreign entity whisper in my brain, you know, so it could have been whispering in his ear. It could have been telling him what to do, and he wouldn't have sort of known that at first.
Well, but I think to some degree he had to know as an external entity, or he wouldn't have gone looking for all those books.
I think he figured out at some point, but probably not at first.
Okay,
might that would be my guess. Sort of like David Berkowitz probably didn't know it was the dog right away.
Mm-hmm.
He just figured out it was the dog after a while.
But you're right about the physicalness of the entity at the end.
So it just seemed weird to me that it was trying to go through the husband for what to me appeared to be years. And then once the husband gone, it's just like, oh, well, I'll just do it myself.
I was going to say maybe it was able to take more form as she became more aware of it. I don't know.
I don't know either, but I thought it was not clear.
She definitely doesn't know about the entity until that point.
I mean, I thought maybe somehow the husband was trying to, act as kind of like a guard for her or something. Like somehow he found out.
Clearly he was, but by its own words during the end of the movie, it said it was like trying to get him to kill her.
Well, it's interesting because there's a lot of backstory we don't know. We don't know how they met and how he learned of this and didn't tell her about it, yet protected her nonetheless.
Exactly. The whole thing's a little hazy.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily a complaint. I'm just trying to process it.
I mean, I could bullshit. You know, I think given time and effort and thousands of dollars from the Writers Guild, we could probably bullshit explanations for some of this stuff. You know, did the demon somehow accidentally get caught up in this guy as opposed to his intended target? And then when he was anchored to a person, he couldn't directly like affect the wife.
Now, but you understand why I have these questions, right?
Oh no, I understand why you have the question. I get them. I'm perfectly willing to offer to say two things. One, well, three things. One, they could have fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Two, the Hitchcock ham sandwich thing that I'm enjoying the movie too much at that moment to let it bother me, although maybe it will bother me afterwards. Mm-hmm. And then three, maybe there's stuff that was thought out and we missed, or that we can explain if we really want to, so I'm not really going to worry about it all that much.
Well, and for me, it was an after the movie thing that started to kind of nag at my brain. I also want to say about that whole sequence of events at the very, very end of the movie, Phil, you were wondering what my personal connection with the movie was. I have suffered from depression basically my entire life. And I thought that scene at the end of the movie with her in the boat was a phenomenal metaphor, for depression. And that's why it kind of hit me when Barrett mentioned maybe it was whispering to her before it went to the husband. And it was manifesting her depression, is because that last scene when she's in the boat with a gun, she's in a different world that's dark, and this dark force is trying to influence her, and her friend is trying to help her. Her friend is screaming at her, trying to help her, and she doesn't hear her, and it really hit home with me, because that's what severe depression is a lot like, is that you're trapped in this dark place and
can't get out.
And you can't get out, and people are trying to help you, but you don't see that people are trying to help you. And I really thought it was a great metaphor for depression. And even when the friend gets her back to the dock, they look out of the boat and you see the shadow there. And
yeah, right.
Her neighbor says there's nothing there, and she says, "I know," but you see the shadow.
I totally agree, because I'm in the same boat, Eric. I've been in the same situation all my life as well, and it really hit me hard too.
Yeah, so I think it was a phenomenal metaphor, just for that, and it's part of the reason my thoughts got so confused around the entity, is because that metaphor hit me so hard. And it's why I wanted to watch it with Dan and Susie, just to see if this movie is really as good as I thought it was, or whether just I loved it because I related with that metaphor so personally.
Well, I think that metaphor, yeah, the end is the best part for it, but it's throughout the whole movie. Just the whole presence of it is like the presence of depression.
Yeah.
It's always there, but seems like nothing.
Well, and when she says, "I know," at the end, it's like, because, you know, you can't point at depression. You know? You can't say, "There's my depression. It's bothering me." But it's a presence, and you feel it, even if nobody else does.
Nobody sees it or acknowledges it.
Exactly, yeah.
And I mean, the depression can be nothing. I mean, in this case, yes, her husband dies by suicide, which would be depressing for anybody, but you don't need to have anything to set off
right
depression. So the depression can literally be over nothing except for the depression.
Exactly.
You know, and so that nothing can
be going fine. Your job can be going fine. You can have a great girlfriend or whatever, you can have plenty of money, and still feel like everything's awful.
Right. And that's why people who don't know about it or unaware that someone has it will miss it, because they'll look and they'll see this person has things that are everything's great. You know, they've got the great family, they've got the great job, they got the great whatever.
Life's better than mine.
Yeah. They can't possibly be depressed. Like, think of like Robin Williams, right? You know,
exactly.
You know, I mean, okay, he had the body hair, but other than that, everything, there's nothing there, and yet it's that nothing is the thing that's bothering you. So it's a weird thing. But yeah, I think that's an interesting, it's not a take I'd thought of, but I think it's a great metaphor.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, that whole end scene just had my senses all heightened because it felt so familiar to me.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I kind of railroaded this conversation because I wanted to get there.
No, I think that's good.
I apologize for monopolizing this last 30 minutes of the conversation, but I had a destination.
It's either that or more Taylor Swift jokes. One of the two. Speaking of Phil, are you still there?
I still am. But I was letting Eric discuss. It was an interesting conversation. So
I have to confess that when Eric was talking about this, I mean, as most of you know, I've known him my entire life, and I have to confess, I did not know any of this.
Oh,
you hit it well.
Thank you.
I mean, you never. And I don't know if I failed you as a friend or what, but I'm just sitting and thinking to myself, I don't remember you ever talking about it. I don't remember you ever saying, well, there you go. Because, yeah. I mean, you never really acted.
No, I laugh about it.
Don't take this the wrong way. You never acted abnormal. I mean,
oh, that's you know, true.
I mean, well, yeah, that no,
no, that's not true.
Well, that's the thing. Okay. I mean, you never
don't. Most depressed people don't show it. I mean, you wouldn't know. Most people, you know, that are depressed are.
No, but my mother told me at one point that as early as fourth grade, like in fourth grade, I said something along the lines of, there are some days where I just wish I wasn't alive anymore.
Ow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been dealing with it for a long time. And at it's at a point where it's just part of my life, and I've learned how to deal with it and how to roll with it, and how to live with it. So it's not something that I'm in fear of anymore. It's just something I live with. But it took me a long time to get there.
Yeah, I hear that.
Well, like I said, I never knew.
Well, and you didn't feel me, Kevin. Nobody really knew. And it's because I didn't want them to know.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Well, I just brought the whole podcast out.
That on that note. Well, it's not like it's a happy movie.
Why do I feel like we should be like running a PSA? You know, it's like, you're feeling sad and depressed, please dial 1-800. You know, because we can't. And look, we make fun a little bit. We laugh because I don't take anything serious. But, you know, you can't watch a movie now without it being spoiled if there's suicide in it, because immediately, you know, they flash up the suicide hotline. Actually, TV shows, right? They will flash up if there's something suicidal happening in a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, I guess I know what's going to happen in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it is a thing, right? It is good that this stuff comes out. People have sat on it for way too long. And
I think it's important for it to be okay to talk about.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons this isn't related to the podcast, but on Netflix, there's a special by Bo Burnham called Inside, where he explores a lot of his emotional health issues during the pandemic through this special. And one of the reasons I like that so much is because he was there doing his thing, talking about it. It was cool.
I wanted to bring up also that there's a whole part about the dying and grief from dying as well, and this couples to that depression issue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah,
also a thing here is on your side is that everyone can struggle with mental health, but men in particular are really bad at dealing with it in productive ways.
Yes,
because our instinct is to hurt something.
Or just, me tough man, no talk about feelings.
Right, exactly. And the more that it's okay to do that, I think in the long run, the better. You know, men are much more likely and much more to be to successfully die by suicide than women are.
I have no idea what the stats are on that.
I don't know.
I've seen them recently. They are really ugly. Mm-hmm. So, but they're also part of it, I think, is just because they're much less likely to ask for help because we're dumbasses.
Yes.
A lot of the time. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. Depression does suck.
It does.
It does.
It's a terrible thing. Yeah.
I've never heard anybody recommend it.
No.
No, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Depression gets a 0% in Rotten Tomatoes.
Although, always be that one.
No, a zero would be so bad it's good. It has to be a 1%.
So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to drag this whole episode down.
You didn't. Let's talk about the movie is not like a happy movie. You're not like dancing around in this movie and
true.
Talking about
that is true.
Was there anything I missed in my kind of accelerated summary there that you guys wanted to talk about?
Oh, we should talk about the shapes. We really didn't
go into
much detail. And like the Escher like looks that she got when she was in the house, and the shape was in the staircase, and the staircase looked all weird. It really had me. That creeped me out more than anything else. That's the kind of horror I like. I like the horror that's just kind of messes with my senses.
And Mike's right. The first time it happened, it was really disconcerting.
Yeah.
You were like, wait, what? Did the room just move? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's like there was one point, like the first night when she was outside or something like that, or she opens up the door and looks at something. And in the reflection of the door, there's a human shape.
But okay.
Then she turns around. Yeah. And then she shuts the door, whatever. She turns around. There's like nothing there. And you don't see anything move or anything like that. And there's and I think we're talking about the one time she was in the basement in the workshop, and there's this column there. And the way she stood with the edge of the column with the door behind, it looked like there was another shape there. And, mm-hmm. and I'm sitting there thinking, oh, that's freaking me out. I mean, that's quite good.
I got goosebumps on some of those.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, they did that well.
So, let's see. What else did we want to discuss about this film? We did get to the ending there.
Oh, so I guess I kind of skipped over the fact that the husband had been murdering a whole bunch of women and putting them under the floorboards in the other house.
Yeah, there is that, too. Yeah.
Detail. Yeah,
there's that reveal that we talked about that I said, I see what you mean.
That was a moment.
Yeah, because that was, that was definitely a moment. And that's kind of when we more and more discovered, okay, that this is an interesting secret, but we didn't even discover. But then, like, it wasn't until the end, like, when she was talking, when we thought what she was about to do herself in. Mm-hmm. You know, when she's talking with the personified, her husband, well, the entity personified as her husband, you know, on the boat, you know, and that's when he was saying pretty much, you know, there's nothing but only me. It's like, see, that's why I thought it was he was deaf, because he was trying to, you know, get back, you know, get her back, because it was like she was his when she died. And.
Well, I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if a demon, I mean, I'd say, demon's a good argument, too.
They just did demon, that's all.
Right. You know, and it was, well, it's funny because, you know, she feels him rubbing her arms, and all of a sudden she's like, oh, Owen, oh, then you hear the voice. I'm not Owen. And all of a sudden, wow.
Oh, that moment was so good.
Because
I'll be honest, when they started like touching and hugging. I was like, oh God, are we going to get like a scene out of Ghost? it was getting super cheesy, super quick. And I was just like, oh no, I don't want this movie to be awful. And then when he says, no, not Owen, I was just like, oh yes.
It had that Invisible Man feel to it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I was so happy when that line was delivered.
Oh yeah, but then like I said though, it's like when he was talking with her in the boat, and that's when we discover the reason why he was murdering all those people, all those women, was, you know, because he was trying to fool this entity.
Right.
Yeah, you know, he's like, I'm trying, you know, it's just like, you know, kept on fooling me and all that sort of thing, and finally it, and that's when he gave up. You know, saying, look, maybe if I kip me, the husband probably thinking, well, maybe if I do myself in, then, you know, maybe the, you know, this entity will leave her alone. That's why he said, mm-hmm. you know, you're safe.
Right. Well, yeah. And another thought I had is maybe she would have been if she hadn't gone over to that house. Right.
Yeah, that's right. And she took the statue.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, the only thing, like the bookstore, I wanted to learn more about the architecture in this book, the Caerdroea or whatever, which I had to look up. I guess it's some Celtic turf maze or Welsh turf maze. Mm. It just, all that interested me, but I guess since it's from her perspective, we can only get what she gets. But man, I wanted to know more about that stuff.
Mm-hmm. No, it seems like. There's a really interesting mythology here, and I don't know if it's based on something real or if it was completely made up by the people that wrote this movie.
Yeah, I don't know either, because, I mean, it was, I mean, that also, the book started to make more sense, because one of the notes was, like, for confusing the spirits.
Right.
Uh-huh. Right. It's a labyrinth, and that's what Caerdroea is. It's a Welsh turf maze. So you get lost in the maze, and that's what I think he was doing to the demon.
Right.
But I wanted more of that. I wanted to see more of that.
Let's see. What else do we want to talk?
I'm good.
I'm pretty much done.
Yeah.
Mike?
Yeah, I'm stuck. Really good movie. Hit the themes.
Yeah, yeah, and it may even highlights. Been a message. May have been even be a message movie that, because of what Eric said. I don't know.
I have no idea if it was intentional or not. And unfortunately, I mean, I bought this movie the day it was available on VOD, and there's no commentary or interviews or anything, so I might never know. And that's kind of a bummer.
I just got it on VOD and it said it came with stuff and I haven't really figured out what.
Really?
Yeah, I got it on Amazon and it actually stuff. Said that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
I don't know. Yeah, but one of the things it comes with is a demon sex tape, so I don't think that's really.
Well, I tell you this, I would have bought it, but I decided to rent it because, again, my original comment, which is when one of you said that it's kind of a slow burn, I was like, ugh. So I'll just rent it.
Slow burn isn't bad, Phil.
Well, and I thought you liked slow burns. Now I'm confused.
Well, it depends on what your definition of slow burn is, I guess. I mean, there's slow, and then there's...
So Eric's definition's no good.
Well, there's slow burn. I just think that it's going to be very slow and boring.
Okay, well, if this movie wasn't a slow burn, give me an example of a movie that you do consider to be a slow burn.
Well, I'll bring it up. It's going to be laughs, but The Giant.
That's a slow fizzle.
There's no burning going on. It's just slow.
What was the movie? Oh my God.
The two slow burns that I'm thinking of, one is The Innkeepers.
Yeah, okay.
And the other one is House of the Devil.
And that's another one. That was the one I was trying to think of.
Those are great examples, Kevin.
Thank you.
Because it takes a long, long time to get to the payoff.
Right.
It doesn't mean that what getting there isn't entertaining, right. But if you're someone who wants to cut to the chase, now it doesn't mean that it will be entertaining either. You know, it is, I think, very hard to do a good slow burn story because it can take so long to get to the thing that people are showing up for. Mm-hmm. You know, the cult and the house or the ghosts and the innkeepers. This is a mystery that does take its time getting there.
And just so we're clear, in the future, when I say slow burn, I don't mean uninteresting. I mean slow paced. Because there wasn't a whole lot of action going on in this movie up until the last 30 minutes, right? It's her doing her detective thing and dealing with her grief, which is why I refer to it as slow burn, because the modern viewing audiences have a very short attention span. And I don't think it's entirely their fault. We're being trained to have a short attention span by TikTok and YouTube and everything like that, which is why I use that term when I'm describing a movie like this that isn't necessarily fast paced, because a lot of people, if there's not something happening a mile a minute, they're like, oh, this is boring.
Right. So here's a review.
I'm sorry, Phil, did you like Rosemary's Baby? Because that, a slow burn.
Yep.
So I was going to say, I was just looking up the DVD to see if there was any notable extras.
Special features?
Yeah, special features, what have you. And it doesn't say, but like right here, it's... somebody gave it a 2-star review, one of Amazon's top 1,000 reviewers, so you know it's someone who's got time on his hands. This is one of those movies that is competently made but is unable to make the landing. The basic gist of the story is good. I appreciate that this movie looks like it's doing something that has been done before in other films, managed to shake things up a bit. Third act really works, and the ending leaves an impression, which makes me understand what he means when he says it can't stick the landing. But he said the first two acts are too slow. It's an hour 48 minutes, but feels a lot longer. So that to me sounds like a slow burn horror film. Slow first two acts, big third act. The Vivitch would be another one that would be a slow burn.
The Lighthouse. The Lighthouse was a slow one. It was a burn, slow burn.
Yeah, but it was also awful.
It was a strange.
Oh, God! We have that conversation here on a weekly basis.
Well, not really, but sometimes. Let's see. Anything else? Anything else?
I'm all set.
All right. It seems like we're drying up, so we do have a little time. So, Eric, do you have any news or things you've watched that you wanted to mention to folks to listen to this podcast?
Let me pull up Letterboxd. Not that I can think of off the top of my head. I haven't really watched much this week. Yeah, the only thing I watched this week was the director's cut of Rocky IV.
How was that?
I'd already forgotten that I watched it.
So it left an impression.
Yeah. So that's it. Nothing for me.
All right, sounds good. What about you, Mike?
After going to the movies three times last week, I didn't go this week. I'll be going to see Ghostbusters this weekend. I've actually been rewatching a lot of Better Call Saul.
Good show.
It is a great show. I've been rewatching from the beginning. Speaking, by the way, Eric, of a slow burn story in a lot of ways. There's an episode that seems to take 30 minutes for an old woman to come down the stairs. But yeah, it's a very good show, and I always recommend it. Especially if I'm always surprised when there's people who like Breaking Bad but never watch Better Call Saul. really need to give it a chance.
Well, they're two different flavors, but they share some characters.
They're different flavors. They do share a lot of characters. And I will say that the first season of Better Call Saul, I am not going to say is bad because I do not believe it's bad. I think it's very good. But the criminal element is not really there in anywhere near the same degree that it is, obviously, in Breaking Bad. It becomes a bigger element as the series goes along. Especially when you get Gus Fring returning in season 3 and season 4. So if you're looking for the thrills that you get out of Breaking Bad, that's kind of what's missing. It's just a different kind of excitement, I guess.
All right. Anything else, Mike?
That's it. If there's been any news, I've missed it. I've been busy.
Okay. Let's go with you, Barrett.
I don't really have anything. I've been out of commission for quite a few days.
All right. What about you, Kevin?
I really haven't been watching much of anything, mostly because I've been extraordinarily busy at work.
All right, so let's get into our final thoughts before we do. So, Mike, me, you, and Eric are going to be doing a podcast that's coming up. What's that all about?
Yeah, that's the rumor. That is the Cinema a la Carte podcast, in which we discuss movies that are not necessarily horror movies that we are fans of. We take turns. I don't know what our last one was that we released. Was that History of Violence?
That's correct.
And that was a Phil film. And before that, I believe, was Flash Gordon, which was a me film. And so we've got an Eric film coming up in the pipeline that, you know, that features a couple of award-winning actors and a bear. So tune in for that.
All right. That's right. And Barrett, what's that other podcast that's important in the network?
Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. We just did an interview with Tara Violet from the movie, or that filmed the movie Eye Without a Face. And that'll be coming out soon. And we're going to be reviewing another movie very soon.
All right. Sounds good. Eric, are you back, sir?
I am. I was muted.
Okay. Eric, what's that podcast that you do with your buddy Dan?
I do a general interest podcast called the Skancity Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it wherever you got this one.
All right. Very good. So I guess we can get into our final thoughts on this film. So I'll start. Yeah, this film is really good. It was pretty awesome and a high recommend by me. So let's go with you, Eric.
Yeah, same. I love this movie. I own this movie, and I recommend that y'all watch this movie.
Mike.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this film. It was one of those movies that I walk out, and like I know that it's probably going to be on my best of list of the year. And there haven't been a lot of those this year. I've seen a lot of things I liked. I haven't seen a lot that I've loved. And this is definitely a very high, highly rated film. Strong recommend.
All right. Let's go for you, Barrett.
Yeah, I love this film. Give it a high recommend. I own it as well. Definitely see it. It's a great flick.
Kevin.
Yes, I recommend it. It keeps you focused. It keeps you focused on the film. It keeps you focused on what's going on. And it's definitely a good recommend.
All right. So I guess we can wrap it up then. So once again, this film is called The Night House. It was originally premiered at theaters and is now on VOD anywhere. VOD is found for purchase or it's not free at the moment. It's getting fairly good reviews, over 80%. It appears that all of us thought it was a fairly solid film, and that's pretty much it. So with all that stated, Eric, why don't you leave us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in. Let's talk about The Night House. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.